Hey, thanks for listening to the Two Pros and a Cup of Joe podcast with LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn, and myself, Jonas Knox. Make sure you catch us live weekdays, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. You can find your local station for the Two Pros and a Cup of Joe show over at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Welcome into the show. It's Two Pros and a Cup of Joe. Yeah. Got my man, young brother, Brady Quinn, the O Brothers, number two of the O Brothers. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. You know, just kind of feeling vindicated a little bit after.
Astro Island.
Someone decided to show up, man.
Hey.
Someone decided to show up. I was a day late, dollar short, but now they're here.
We'll get to that. Brady was sitting there sipping his Mai Tais. He seemingly was all by himself, and now all of a sudden, Stroh's Island is popping. The party has began, even though Brady was there maybe a tad bit early, but yeah, we'll get to that. Dak Prescott, what's the latest on him? If we're talking about him, it isn't just about how good he is. It's generally speaking, Brady, an injury. We're dealing with an injury, so we'll talk about that and more. Yeah, a lot to get to. Make sure you follow us. That's Fox Sports Radio, iHeart Radio app, Sirius XM. You can get us on there as well. Thanks to all our affiliates out there. If you love listening to the show, make sure you check out and subscribe to our podcast anywhere where you download your podcast, that where you get your material from. So make sure you check us out. Tell a friend. Give us a star rating. Leave a comment. All right, so let's jump into it because we do have a lot to get to. And, well, there was a lot of swinging and a lot of contact being made with white balls last evening.
not to be misinterpreted, by the way.
Yes, yes.
I love our balls.
Yeah. Not to be looked at the wrong way, okay.
Yeah.
The Houston Astros decided to show up.
They did.
You know, defend their home field, something they've struggled to do.
They did.
Jose Altuve getting it started off. Jose Suri, by the way, is a great story. But the minor leaguer who made his World Series debut.
Right.
He had a nice little game. But no, the Astros bats showed up. I thought that was going to happen week one. This was – or game one. This was game one to me, how it was supposed to look. But, you know, bottom line is
they got
Houston gets the series back to 1-1. They've got to find a way now to steal one in Atlanta. I still think Houston's the better team, but I don't know. I mean, Berto talked about Atlanta being that team of destiny. I think there's a lot of baseball left to be played. We'll see how – to me, whoever wins game three ultimately is going to win it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's maybe stating the obvious. I mean, because really the stats were after game one, 63% of the teams who win game one go on to win the World Series. So that was in the favor of the Braves. It's tied now. I think game three is the most important of all of them. Whoever wins that, obviously, is going to end up going on to win the World Series.
You know, an interesting correlation that I'm seeing take place is whoever gets up early ends up winning.
Right.
You know, Atlanta got up early on them. They jumped out there in the first inning. Houston, they do it in the second inning of this one. And so it's like, okay, this seems like this is one of those type of situations. Whoever can find their way to the home plate the earliest and the most, consistently, they're the ones that seem to go on and win the game. So
That's interesting.
Yeah,
I feel like you see that in playoff basketball too. Hmm. You know, you see a team get up, especially in a series, and I'm not saying like the team throws the towel necessarily. I think baseball is different because you can get a couple guys on base in one swing, and next thing you know, it changes the outcome of the game. Yeah,
sure.
But I do think you get to a certain point where if you feel like, probably in the case of the Braves too, losing Charlie Morton, you got to be careful now because you've got to go to some other guys in the bullpen. You know, A.J. Minter now is going to have to step up as a starter because of all of that. You know, you might be saying to yourself, yeah, we're not necessarily pitching as much to win this game. We don't want to waste guys' arm, fatigue guys for later games if we're already down in this series. You know, we're already down in this game, and we don't think we have much of a shot coming back. If it's 5-1 in the second, I wonder how much that factors into the decision making of a general manager who's sitting there saying, "Yeah, I don't know about this one. Seems like there's a lot of baseball left to be played in this game." Mm-hmm. That being said, there's no reason to waste pitching when we're already down four runs this early.
Yeah,
maybe it's different. Maybe Dusty Baker would say otherwise when they were down game one. But that's at least how I feel looking at it, because I think you see that a little bit too in the NBA. Teams get down by double digits in the 15-20 point range, and all of a sudden the starters start kind of popping out there in the fourth quarter, barely even play. And they're I'll wait till the next game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the thought process is that goes into how you decide who's coming out and who's staying in baseball, but I do know this. He who puts up the most points is he who laughs last. And you know what? If I'm trying to get to those points, I'm trying to get to them early based off of the trend that I'm seeing. But I'm also sitting there, I'm thinking to myself, this is the World Series. You get time off. After this, you get a little bit of time, not a whole lot of time, but you get time off after this. And if I were skipping as the skipper in one of these dugouts, which you would not want me to be, but if I were, my common sense approach would be there's no tomorrow. So I'm going to look at what this holds for. Okay, plan for seven games, but how could I get it in four? And if I could get it in four, if I got to be a little aggressive, even if we get behind, I'm probably going to stick with who I believe in that moment, who's scheduled for that day can try to get me where I'm trying to go to. And obviously, you depend on your pitchers to be able to get you there. Let me throw this one out at you, Brady. When you're looking at this World Series, I know a lot of people felt like, maybe this isn't the best matchup. This isn't great for the television.
Ratings?
Yeah, somebody said this, right? You're laughing. I mean, do you remember who said this? It could be bad because it could be over. It could be bad on ratings. It seems like it's been an entertaining World Series so far.
Sure.
What's your take on that?
Yeah, no, it's been entertaining so far. I don't think it has been a bunch of pitcher's duels or, you know, neither team necessarily controlling it through pitching. I don't know that anyone anticipated that being the case with either of these two teams. But as far as ratings go, I mean, look, it doesn't matter how good the play is on the field. It's just not two of the bigger
brands.
It's the markets. I mean, you needed Boston. You needed L.A. Everyone kind of knows that, given the history of both of those organizations, the following that's there.
So much
the
for
bigger
that,
markets.
Bill.
Yeah. I think you could have made a case if it was Houston and L.A., you know, that there was a lot. There's a lot of history there. You know, Berto would be fired up. I don't even know if he'd be in here today. But there's that would have rated decently well, I think. Given the series,
I'd be drunk right now, that's for sure.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, case in point. This was probably, from a ratings perspective, the worst case scenario you could get. But, you know, look, that's why you play the games. I mean, you're not doing it for ratings. You're doing it to see who's the champion. And I kind of love the fact that Atlanta's, again, we keep calling them like the team of destiny this year.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they found their way to it. You know, give them credit for that. And then Houston's obviously just a really good baseball team. They have been all year.
Oh, bang, bang, bang. Okay, so if it goes the distance, I'm still sticking with Atlanta if it goes the distance.
Okay.
But I did say this, while everyone was so bullish about saying Atlanta and leaving you on Astro Island by yourself, I do recall saying to you that if the better team is the Astros, then they will have adjusted to what they saw and what they experienced in that first game, and they would come back and they would apply the pressure accordingly.
Well, what do you mean? Angels in the outfield helping the Atlanta Braves out? I mean, my God.
Yeah, well, you know.
Between the ricochet off Morton's shin, yeah, and just everything else the way it worked out.
Yeah, well, the Astros showed up and took back what seemingly was the team of destiny was going to run away with it, and now it's 1-1. So I think whoever wins this next game, I believe, has obviously, in my humble estimation, the inside track, depending on how they win the game, because both scores have been a tad bit lopsided. But in both cases, I would say I don't know that I came away with watching the game and saying, okay, Houston is definitively better than Atlanta. Atlanta is definitively better than Houston. I didn't feel that way. But after this next game, I feel like you'll get a better idea, more accurate readout as to who's made the adjustments and how those adjustments are playing, whether it be how you're swinging the ball, how you adapt to how the pitching is going, or how you're adapting to how you're pitching in the game. I mean, the adjustments are taking place. What is your main takeaway in terms of how one of these teams needs to take over the series to give themselves the best chance?
I mean, look, it's two things in baseball. It's always hitting and pitching. I mean, that's the biggest thing. And so, you know, can you put both those things together, you know, string them together the next, you know, next four games, if it goes that far? I'm assuming it'll be a tight battle, at least the way game one went now to game two. I thought Houston was going to take it in five. Maybe they still can at this point, but it's just that if Houston gets sparked early, like you kind of talked about, and they get that momentum early in the game, I think it's over. I mean, I've always been a big Jose Altuve fan, but the reality is, if those guys continue to keep their bats going and they can pitch well enough and just put in enough runs, like I think they're the better team, hitting team, over the course of it. That'll see itself out. Like, that's how I kind of see how this thing is going to play out. But again, I was wrong game one, so we'll see. Game three is pivotal in my mind.
Well, there's a whole lot to happen. There's a whole lot to take place. And you know what? We'll be here to talk about it and to make it happen, and so that you guys understand what it is that we're feeling and what we're thinking about our emotions and our thoughts as it applies to this World Series. All right, so we got a lot to get to. J.J. Watt, this, I think it's likely the end of the season for him. But who knows? It's J.J. Watt. We have seen him complete miracles. But we'll talk about that. Dak Prescott, that calf seems to be a little bit more naggy than what maybe originally anticipated. And he still has to, well, do something to be able to play in the game that's coming up. We'll talk about that and more. But first, Discover. It matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year. It's amazing because Discover's accepted at 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. Learn more about Discover.com/yes. 2021 Nielsen Report limitations do apply. You're listening to Two Pros and a Cup of Joe. That's Brady Quinn. I'm LeVar Arrington. Jonas is taking the week off. Do not panic. Do not melt down. He will be back. All right. This is not a, where's Jonas? He's not coming back. Jonas is coming back. We know this is our new launch of our new show. He's here. He will be back. Calm down. Take a sip of water. All right. It'll be okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, yeah, we'll talk a little Dallas, the star, Dak Prescott.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let me tell you something about this song right here.
Tell me something.
They used to play this joint before kickoffs.
Yeah.
And I can recall my rookie year, this joint used to have me ready to blow somebody up, bruh.
There's like nothing like AC/DC.
Hey, bro, when that rip comes in, like when he comes, oh man, that guitar comes in the way it did. Like when, and you're sitting there looking across the field and you're seeing other dudes and they're looking back at you and you're about to come down and rain on them and drop that hammer on them and you hear this song come on. Hey, Brady.
Hey.
It's going to be smoke.
I got to ask this because I never really had this, at least not, I'm nowhere near close to the level you did. I mean, I last stopped playing defense like my sophomore year of high school. I was a weak side linebacker.
Word.
And playing quarterback on the other side. And finally they're like, hey, you're pretty good. We're going to go ahead and just let you play quarterback. Yeah. All right. You probably looked across the line and could see it could be in a running back. It could have been on special teams. The absolute fear in some other man's eyes. Huh. What is that like?
Oh, man, I wouldn't say fear, but what you could see was indecision or maybe not a total belief, You know, it's interesting because when I had the opportunity before they forced me to take it off, which I wore a visor, and it wasn't for the look. I wore a visor because I'm a migrainer. And sometimes bright light really jacks me up. So I would have on a visor. And I recall the most interesting responses or looks from guys that I ever got in my career was that time when I wore the visor and I didn't wear a mouthpiece. So I would be lining up and I'm on the ball. They made me a stack linebacker. So they put me on the ball. I'm a strong side backer. I'm over top of a tackle or I'm over top of a tight end. Now, rookie year, I ain't wear it, but my sophomore season in the league, I had it on. I could just remember I got to such a zone and how I was able to play against tight ends because you had to learn or get your ass kicked for the rest of the duration of your career. So I had to learn how to go hand-to-hand combat, something I had never did. I always played off the ball. But once I started figuring out how to assassinate dudes off the snap of the ball, I just recall I'd walk up to them. And once they start the cadence, I'd be like, here we go. And I start smiling. And then I start laughing before the ball be snapped. And you look at them, they be looking ahead. They be looking forward because, you know, they don't want you to know that they're going to block you or where they're going. And when the ball would be snapped and after the play would be finished, you know, you walk back to the huddle and you're looking at the linemen, and they look at you like they, you know, a lot of times, more often than not, they'd be like, "What the F is wrong with you, man? Like, what is wrong with you, bro?" And then by the time we get to the game being over, Brady, you know, the conversation is like, "Dude, you are one bad mother effer, bro. Like, God bless you. Like, good luck. I hope you stay healthy because you're crazy." And yeah. I love that. I love being the dude that they thought he had no limits to how crazy he was, you know, and that was my thing, like, especially in the league because you did not have to wear a mouthpiece.
Right.
So I would lean down, you know, as a stack backer, you get down low enough where you're almost face to face with them because you're going to get a hold of their shoulder so you can set that edge. So you're basically face to face with a 300-pound man, a massive man, and I'm smiling at you. Like, and my teeth are white too. I got them porcelain veneers.
You got some pearly whites.
I veneered them up. You know what I mean? They said when you get money, don't change. But I did, and I went ahead and fixed my. You know, I had a couple gaps here and there, and I filled them in. And so I was smiling like crazy. So if I lost any of them, I would have been able to replace them real easily. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
I digress. Speaking of, if you lost something, the health of Dak Prescott, Brady. Let's jump into this and let's talk about this. What seemingly just looked like a minor strain and, you know, it's the last drive of the game. Turns out they're still dealing with, are they going to be able to play Dak Prescott this weekend and in the upcoming game? Now, the reports have said, and if CeeDee Lamb is, if his game is, or his, better yet, his, if his medical eye is as good as his football eye, then Dak Prescott should be good because all accounts given by him, he says that, you know, Dak looks normal. Dak is Dak. He's ready to go. But, you know, Mike McCarthy is saying he needs to clear a couple more protocols before he's through the threshold of being able to play against Minnesota on Sunday's game. So what's your take on this? Is this much to do about nothing, or, you know, how are you looking at it?
Well, it's Thursday, right? And so you're getting into the beef of the preparation, the
Correct.
Beef of
Excuse
that
me.
Week,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
as we start Jeez. Preparing.
yeah.
And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do what teams do.
Uh-oh.
So when you're playing someone, right, you're looking for some tea leaves. You're mm-hmm. looking for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And someone hasn't gotten CeeDee Lamb the memo.
Okay.
Because CeeDee Lamb's out here basically telling you what's going to happen.
Right.
He's talking about Dak Prescott. He was quoted as saying, he looks great.
Right.
In and out of his drops. To me, he looks perfectly fine. That was CeeDee Lamb after
practice.
I see
what you're doing. Yep.
CeeDee Lamb also wanted to go ahead and comment on Michael Gallup, who's dealing with some calf strains. He's got a lot of calf strains there in Dallas. And you know, he's commenting on him. He'll be back in no time. I'm not worried about it. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, dude.
Stop.
Someone's got to tell you, like, you don't want to provide Mike Zimmer and the Minnesota Vikings anything.
On
like, your
Thursday.
Head coach.
On
your
Thursday.
Head
co-
yeah.
Right.
Your head coach is out here talking about hurdles. You're out here giving out the injury report. Oh, no, man, he's good. It was crashing there. He looks great in his job. He'll be perfect. Like,
right.
Let them think there's a chance that someone else will have to come in behind Dak. Let them think there's a chance that maybe Michael Gallup's not going to suit up and add to that very talented, you know, roster of wide receivers. I mean, this dude is funny as hell, but the reality is I think he'll be fine. He's had enough time now to recover from this. But, you know, the other thing is, if you're worried about Dak, shouldn't you be worried about Trayvon Diggs? You know, he was limited in practice as well this week.
Right.
He's been phenomenal this year as far as getting his hands on football.
He's got to be the lead for defensive MVP, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think he's the lead for defensive player of the year. I just think it comes down to – because it's going to – one of two things is going to happen the rest of the year. Teams are either going to stop throwing at him or because of his style of play, which, I mean, take into account, for example, the New England Patriots game. Remember he's got the interception, right, which ended up being, I think, what, a pick six he ended up taking or taking it down close?
Yep.
And then what happened the following drive? He gambles again, should have stayed on top, and then gave one up.
Yep.
I mean, if he wants to be that type of player, sure, he's going to have a ton of picks. But teams are also going to double move him. They're going to scheme some things up to be able to take advantage of that. So I think he's up for defensive player of the year, statistically looking at it. We'll see if that holds. Because, you know, when people start talking about the best cornerbacks in the league, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find someone better than Marshon Lattimore for the New Orleans Saints. Now,
Truth. He
did just give up, you know, a big play to DK Metcalf, but, you know, it wasn't like he was that far off from that guy. I mean,
yeah, and that's DK Metcalf.
That's DK Metcalf. That's a big man. Yeah. That's a tough matchup. That was pretty much one of the only things he really allowed in that game. But the reality is this, like, and you know this, like the best, like Champ Bailey, you play with Champ.
Yes, I did.
He didn't throw at Champ, man. Like Champ was that good where you're like, I might test him once or twice or something. But for the most part, the best cornerbacks, we say they're out on the island because they are on vacation. Like they've got their deal locked down so they can sip that Mai Tai and sit out there. They don't have to worry about the guy that they're covering because no one's throwing their way anyway.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so this team could easily be undefeated. Where they're at right now.
Yeah.
They have, what, 5 wins, 1 loss. That 1 loss being in the first game against Tampa Bay. And if you recall, they could have won that game.
Yep.
And so this could easily be an undefeated team. How important is this Minnesota game? I mean, it seems like their schedule is moderately, you know, doable. I mean, they get through, if they're able to get through Minnesota, you got Denver. I don't know that we think Denver is as good as we originally thought they were. I mean, they're kind of like a second, maybe even borderline third tier team.
They've fallen off of late.
Yeah, right. The Falcons are fighting, but they're still an average team. The Kansas City Chiefs, you would have thought that this is a hard one for them. And I know you may defend this and say, hey, it's Kansas City, and I wouldn't disagree with you. But for the moment, this is not a good team as well.
They put the Jets this week, so I mean.
Well, and so now they could get back on track. But with that being said, I mean, I don't know how long that goes for. But then you're talking about an interesting little 2-game stretch with the Vegas Raiders and with the Saints. So perceivably, you're talking about 1, 2, 3. I don't want to say 4 with Kansas City, but maybe it's a possible in the sense that the way they're playing right now.
Kansas City doesn't play the Jets. That's the Bengals who are going to put a whooping on them.
Jeez.
Chiefs play the Giants.
Okay, they're playing. Well, I mean, the Giants are coming off of a good victory, but I don't know that.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see if Kansas City messes around with that one.
It's a 9.5-point spread, if that tells you anything.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, what does this – I mean, this – Dallas team, and I know this might sound crazy, this Dallas team could be pushing towards a 1 seed in the NFC.
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think if you think about it, they've only played 2 divisional games. So I would say if you look at the rest of their division, like they're 5-1 now. I don't know that they beat the Vikings. This will be a tough matchup for them. And
okay.
By the way, I think it's more important for the Minnesota than it is for Dallas. And the reason is Minnesota is largely looked at as a wild card team right now. They're 3-3.
Yep.
The Packers are rolling. I don't know if the Packers win tonight, but you know they're dealing with some different circumstances. They're still going to win the NFC North.
Okay.
So it's more important for the Vikings to win for their hopes and chances
keep
of
pace.
Just being still a wild card team at this point. For Dallas, you know, it's not pivotal only because to me they might sweep the division. I don't know who you feel like based on how Dallas has played this year or who you're confident in being able to take them down within their division. It's usually tough to go 6-0 in your division. You know, 5-1 probably is more realistic.
But think about
NFC East. 9 wins. But that's 9 wins in the NFC East if they sweep them and they win their 4 of their divisional games. They only need a few more in order to be in that conversation for the number one overall seed. So to your point, I think when you look at the Dallas Cowboys in comparison to the Washington football team, the Philadelphia Eagles, and the Giants, who are all sitting at 2-5.
They can win it.
Yeah. They got a clear path now to going to the number one seed. The biggest thing would be, obviously, the Buccaneers are 6-1.
Yep.
They need the Bucs to drop a couple of games.
Yep.
You know, they need to obviously, you know, have the better overall record, which I think, you know, there's a great chance that Dallas, because of how weak that division is, and you look at the NFC South, for example, in comparison, you've got the Saints, who are a wild card team right now.
Yep.
The Atlanta Falcons, who have come on of late. They've won 2 in a row. Matt Ryan's playing better. Kyle Pitts is showing out. They're 500. And you got the Panthers, who've completely fallen off. They've lost 4 in a row. But still, like, that just looks like an overall better division, more competition. Like, Saints, Bucks, they play this week.
Yeah.
I mean, you never know. Never say never when you got a Sean Payton coach team.
I've told you that. I think Sean Payton is comfortable with how he schemes against Tampa. They might have not have should have been better than them or beat them last season, but they did twice, and they did handily. I think that's a matchup. That's style matchup points in terms of Sean Payton versus Tampa Bay and how he feels about them. So that could be a slide right there. That could be a loss.
So to your point, I think Dallas, if they don't mess it up, right, they got to stay healthy. They can't mess it up.
Right.
But there's no doubt they are on a path to maybe being the number one overall seed in the NFC, which would be kind of crazy. Because, I mean, I think if you think about where this team was last year with Mike McCarthy, how bad the defense was with Mike Nolan struggling too, and then Dak Prescott getting hurt, it was a different conversation. But to turn it around in year two, be number one overall, going into the playoffs, that would be pretty incredible.
Brady, I listen. Last year, Dallas finishes third in the NFC East. They had a record of 6-10. And a lot of people were very, very critical of Mike McCarthy. All right. And, you know, they replace the defensive coordinator. They make a change there. They bring in Dan Quinn, which I thought was the move of the offseason, maybe in the entire National Football League.
Preach.
And so,
my brethren.
Yeah, right. So so with that taking place, and Dallas seemingly, as you mentioned, being in the driver's seat, so to speak, to control their destiny to get a really, really good seeding going into the playoffs. I know we're a little ways off and a lot could play out, but where we stand today, what, in your opinion, estimation, does this do for how we view Mike McCarthy?
Yeah, I think he's – here's the tough part about this. Offensively, they were on this path last year when Mike McCarthy first got there. Kellen Moore's their OC.
Yep.
He's been their OC. When Mike McCarthy got there, he wasn't coming in bringing in his offense. It's Kellen Moore. He saw what they were doing. He saw the success that they had, the way they were building, and he wanted to keep Kellen Moore as the play caller. So it's his system. It's his play calling. Mike's just overseeing that. I think there's two ways of looking at it. You could say that's what a good head coach does. He looks at what's there. He looks at, you know, who's the personnel that's there. He sees talent even on his coaching staff and can say, I'm not going to mess with this. You know, and he had gone back and forth with the play calling duties in Green Bay and whether Aaron Rodgers was happy about that or Green Bay Packers fans were happy about that. You can go through the history there and read about, you know, the ups and downs that they had faced there. I don't think he wants to get involved in that moving forward, his second time being a head coach. So I think he shows a lot of wisdom in saying, hey, we got a guy here in Kellen Moore who's special. Some people are talking about him being potential head coaching candidates, different, various, coaching jobs or destinations out there. So he came in. He didn't mess with anything. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes coaches have egos and they come in and they go, we gotta do it this way. You know, that play's gotta be called this because that's what I called it, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's gotta be called Wolf. Well, why is it called Wolf, Coach? That's just what I always call it. Oh, okay. All right. Well, this is what we call it. You know, we call it Seam 678. So we don't need to call it Wolf.
If we got
it's the same
it already.
Damn play.
Right.
But we already got it as this. So that's what we're gonna go with.
Right.
He didn't go in and change things up, so I appreciated that about him. I also think the other thing that kind of flies under the radar is he made a change. So many head coaches are so afraid at times to say, I was wrong, or this was not a good hire. And I assume it was him. I don't think it was, Stephen Jones or Jerry Jones putting pressure on him. But he moved on from Mike Nolan. He's like, hey, look, bottom line is not the right scheme fit, not the right fit for our personnel. Let's go find someone else. Let's go find that defensive mind we need to help us take that jump after last year. They bring in Dan Quinn, so he admits that mistake. I think he's done an incredible job of managing all of it. And I don't know that we give head coaches credit for that because we don't give quarterbacks credit for that. How many times do we sit there and say, well, he's a game manager?
Right.
Hey, bro, it's not just like, hey, I'm just walking out there handing out the football all the time. You're putting your team in the best position sometimes. You're checking to the right run play. You're actually maybe checking from a pass to a run because it's the right thing to do, mm-hmm. given that look. Like, there is something to that, and I think he's done that as their head coach. So I think he deserves a lot of credit. If they get that number one overall seed, he should be up for coach of the year. I know they're talented, but still, from what they were last year to what they are this year, the changes he's made, the tweaks, he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I was having a conversation with Greg Jennings not too long ago, and Greg was making the point that if you look at Mike McCarthy historically, what he was doing in Green Bay, it's playing out almost exactly the same exact way it did when he went to Green Bay, and how that first year seemed to be a fill-out year, a understanding year, a data dump gathering type of year for Mike McCarthy. And then he came out and was basically a lights-out coach for Green Bay, after that for a nice amount of time.
Right.
So when I look at where Mike McCarthy is right now and the way this Dallas team is playing – a lot of people in the preseason, said that I was being a homer because I was saying that this Dallas team could be really good. And I thought that this could be the turnaround year for them, not because they drafted, one of my young proteges and Micah Parsons, but because I was looking at the acquisitions. They really, really focused in on their defense, which they generally don't do on the high scale of it. It's always offense first, and then we'll do whatever we need to do after that. And then you bring in, Quinn as the DC. And when I saw that take place, I was like, okay, they're bringing in a fiery, tough, hard-nosed guy who understands that playing great defense is about being able to play quick and playing fast. And so to me, I feel like that gives Mike McCarthy, that gives Dak Prescott, gives the play callers, it gives everybody more confidence on offense when you have a defense that can actually bail you out when you get out there and you're aggressive and you take chances, and it doesn't have to be such a game, air quotes, management game for Dak right. Prescott or the offensive play caller. You can go out there and do what you need to do because the defense is going to show up for you. So I think that's probably the major difference moving forward for this Dallas team.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, again, that's how you have a complete team, and I think that's what they're working towards. We've known their offense has been prolific, been able to put up production points. It's about their defense now bringing them up. And those improvements, bringing on Dan Quinn, that's going to be why this team's going to win a Super Bowl.
Indeed. And you know what? There's a Super Bowl for horse racing. You know what it's
yes,
called?
Yes, there is.
It's the Breeders' Cup. They come from all over the land, every corner of the globe. The best thoroughbreds from around the world with one goal in mind. the title of world champion. Visit BreedersCup.com/2021 for more information and catch all the action live on November 5th and 6th. Yeah! Oh, wait. That's not horse racing. That's a cowboy. Rustling.
Oh, come on.
It had something to do with a horse. Anyway, all right, you're listening to Two Pros and a Cup of Joe. That's Brady Quinn. I'm LeVar Arrington. We're the O brothers. And you know what? Jonas is taking the rest of the week off. So enjoy your time off, Jonas. Get yourself together, and we'll see you next week. We love you, bruh. Coming up on the other side of this break, we got a lot to get to, sir. And you know what? Yeah, the guys, Mark Ingram, the other running back in where is that, New Orleans? Oh, yeah, Alvin Kamara. We're going to have some conversations about that because Houston seems to be making some moves, but are they good moves or are they bad moves? I mean, we're going to talk about all those things, but Mark Ingram, topic that we'll touch on when we get back on the other side of this break is Fox Radio, Fox Sports Radio. Yeah, Two Pros. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Be sure to catch live editions of Two Pros and a Cup of Joe with Brady Quinn, LeVar Arrington, and Jonas Knox weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, you want to look like Biggie Smalls and the rest of the cast getting money. You want to sit Mo on my living room floor and play Nintendo with C's and Nino. You know how you do that, Brady Quinn?
How do you do that?
Well, you're going to want to look like $1 million when you're getting money, but
yeah,
you only want to spend a handful of bucks, so upgrade to a Dollar Shave Club. Six-blade razor for a noticeably smooth shave thanks to their 6 precision-cut stainless steel blades. Find your perfect shave with Dollar Shave Club stores. Yeah, that's Dollar Shave Club in store. All right, so go to the store and find them. Welcome to the club. All right. Yeah, so just in case, we're coming up on the end of this first hour. So if you missed it, Lee Delap is about to put us up on it.
Sometimes you can't get to everything in the world of sports or entertainment. Good thing the guys are here to bring you, in case you missed it.
What we got, Lee?
You guys, in case you missed it, Mark Ingram's heading back to New Orleans. Trade was reached. Texans are sending Mark Ingram back to, you know, help Alvin Kamara out a little bit. You think that's going to make any difference out there for the Saints?
I think
it will.
Yeah.
The way they're playing offense right now, it's all Alvin Kamara. They need to take some of that off his shoulders, bring in a back that can pound away, a little thunder and lightning. And
yeah.
You can utilize Alvin Kamara, getting some touches on the perimeter in the passing game. I mean, I think it would definitely help with where this team is currently at. Yeah.
And you're getting the team's leading rusher. I mean, not by much. I mean, it's 290-some yards. But we know that Mark Ingram's DNA is to be able to run hard and violently between the tackles. So I think that'll be good for Alvin Kamara, like you said, Brady. But I think it'll also be great for the passing game as well because it's going to force defenses to think about having to stop that run just a little bit more than what they did before they got him.
Teammate right. Brandon Cook's not all too happy about it either, taking to Twitter saying, "This is bull crap, such a joke."
Yeah,
he might be on his way out too,
That's everybody. One way of getting it done, right? You gotta air out your grievances nowadays in the NFL if you want to get out and get somewhere else.
You got one team working for a World Series. You got another one working for a trade to get out of there. It is what it is, I guess.
You guys, in case you missed it, Lakers blew a 26-point lead, first-half lead, against the Thunder last night. And with 4 seconds left, Darius Baisley stole the ball and dunked it. Russell Westbrook not too happy about that, let it be known, and got ejected right before the end of the game.
Mm. Yeah, right before he had that quad, what was it? Not a triple-double, it was a quad-double, right?
Wow. Yeah, quadruple-double, yeah.
Quadruple-double. He played well. LeBron didn't play, though, did he?
No, he didn't.
No, he was out.
He's been chilling.
Have you guys ever blown a big lead like that?
Dude, my first start on Thursday Night Football. I mean, we were up 23-10 in the third quarter. And it just nothing went our way down the stretch. Cutler threw for a bunch of yards to come back. I think at one point we had like a – I threw a ball to Kellen Winslow, and he had the ball, then fumbled. They got it back. It just – yeah, nothing went our way. We still went up again. We kind of went back and forth, and then they had a drive to end the game. Yeah.
99, we were beating the S out of Michigan with a Tom Brady coming off of the bench as a switch-up QB. We were up by 10 points. I mean, dropping the hammer on them. Up by 10 points with less than 8 minutes left in the game. Tom Brady comes in, throws two deep crosses on us, and beats us.
Wow.
It was heartbreaking.
You knew then. You knew then the greatness of the GOAT that is Tom Brady.
Yeah, I mean, it was bad. Anyway, Ed Ogeron, LSU. We'll talk about that all and more next hour here.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.